Live from the campus of Hillsdale College in beautiful Hillsdale, Michigan, this is Scott Bertram in for Steve on The Steve Gruber Show, Thursday, March 30th, 2023. Here are three big things you need to know. One, former Vice President Mike Pence deciding how to respond to a judge's decision to have him testify about January 6th, 2021. Speaking to reporters in Iowa, Pence said he's heading to Washington to meet with his attorney to decide how to move forward with appeal. Pence said he had nothing to hide and said he did his duty. Two, Michigan State University will reopen the student union on Monday after it's been closed since a mass shooting last month. Berkey Hall will remain closed along with the MSU Union Food Court in the student union. Three MSU students killed, five others injured. Three, the FDA greenlighting over-the-counter sales of Narcan by late summer. That means the drug that reverses opioid overdoses will be available without a prescription. Narcan is credited with saving lives of thousands over the past few years. And that's where we start hour two of the Steve Gruber Show. Thanks so much for joining us. Scott Bertram sitting in for Steve here on this Thursday all across the great state of Michigan. And everywhere else, too, listening at stevegruber.com or later on to the podcasts where you find your audio or at stevegruber.com. Ingrid Jacks with us this hour from USA Today. And Colonel Grant Newsham, his book, When China Attacks, A Warning to America. We'll spend a couple of segments with him to talk about his warnings and his book in this hour two of the Steve Gruber Show. I'm here on Hillsdale College's campus, where I am a lecturer in journalism, general manager of the student radio station here on campus, host of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, heard on many of these fine radio stations on the weekend, also where you find audio and podcasts, and the Hillsdale College K-12 Classical Education Podcast. Also host that, too. You find me hosting Political Beats, which is a show about music, talking to political people about music. That's at nationalreview.com or where you find audio, or if you want to help out, get free, well, not freebies, but get extra stuff, bonus stuff, patreon.com/politicalbeats. And as I said, the best way to find me is Twitter, actually, at Scott Bertram, S-C-O-T-B-E-R-T-R-A-M. A couple of things following up from earlier this week on the shooting in Nashville and questions about whether or not we ever will read the manifesto from the shooter or see the manifesto from the shooter. Should we? Is that an appropriate thing to do? But there are two arguments here. One is it's not appropriate because who cares about the rantings of essentially a madman, right? On the other hand, does it give us more insight as to what the motive was and how we can prevent this in the future? There are questions. Or if you're in the transgender community, they do not want it published because it might make the movement look bad. There's an effort underway by activists, LGBTQ+ activists, to suppress, to hide, to prevent the publishing of the manifesto of the Nashville school shooter. Quoting, "The focus should be on how this was able to happen in the first place. There should not be such easy access to deadly weaponry," said a spokesperson for PFLAG. "Regardless of the shooter's intentions, the real issue here is the ease of access to deadly weapons in Tennessee and elsewhere." These organizations are plainly afraid it would be bad to use the shooter's words because it might make, might cause people to blame other people who share some of the shooter's ideas. But this is exactly what the groups do, and the media, in fact, advocates if the tables were turned. If it were a conservative, biblically orthodox Christian who shot up a transgender institution, the same people would push the press to publish the manifesto so they could discredit people who shared some of the shooter's ideas. That's certainly what would occur. I'm not sure we need to see the manifesto, but I do know if you apply the standard across the board, we would see it. There would be calls to make it public. there would be calls to see exactly what this person was writing and saying before this horrible shooting. Charles C.W. Cook over at National Review has a wonderful piece called Therefore What? And I want to read a bit of it for you because it focuses on the media coverage. We talked a lot about this on Tuesday, how the media covered this event, how they were very quick to blame Tennessee for laws and not blame the shooter in this incident. Very strange stuff. Terry Moran, I didn't grab this cut, but Terry Moran from ABC, following the attack on TV on Monday, says, "The shooter identified herself as a transgender person. The state of Tennessee earlier this month passed and the governor signed a bill that banned transgender medical care for minors, as well as a law that prohibited adult entertainment as well as male and female impersonators after a series of drag show controversies in the state." So Charles Cook writes, "I want to know what's supposed to come next in Moran's sequence. What's the next step? What's the logical conclusion? The shooter was transgender. Tennessee passed some laws that she didn't like. Therefore, what? Therefore, what was supposed to happen next that makes sense? Why is that a mitigating circumstance? Therefore, she had no choice but to murder some nine-year-olds. Therefore, the state of Tennessee is guilty in some sense. Is that the next logical step that Terry Moran wants us to take as his viewers?" Charlie Cook says, I want to know why these facts were raised as they were, because I cannot see an innocent explanation for Moran's having juxtaposed them with the news he was relaying. Certainly we can quibble over the scale of Moran's implication, but there seems to be little doubt his words were explanatory in nature. And unless such explanations are followed by immediate condemnation, which Moran's were not, that's a pretty massive problem, isn't it? Elsewhere, an NBC reporter named Benjamin Ryan tweeted that, quote, "NBC has ID'd the Nashville school shooter as a 28-year-old who identifies as transgender. Nashville is home to the Daily Wire, a hub of anti-trans activity by Matt Walsh, Ben Shapiro, and Michael Knowles." Charlie Cook says, okay, therefore what? Therefore Walsh, Shapiro, and Knowles are ultimately responsible here? Therefore the shooter should have targeted those people instead? Therefore what? Cook writes, "I cannot help but notice the press has found a clever way of having it both ways in situations such as this. If, rather than six Christians being murdered by a transgender activist, a Christian activist had murdered six transgender people, both Moran and Ryan would have said, well, they would have said the same thing, wouldn't they? They would have blamed the same people. Whatever happens, the blame runs only in one direction. Someone did something horrible. Oh, and while you're here, have you heard about the right-wing speech or legislation that we'd like you to think explains it?" There's a little bit more here, but it's a great piece at nationalreview.com from Charles C.W. Cook. Therefore, what? This portion of the Steve Gruber Show brought to you by Wolverine Water, Michigan's premier water treatment company. Wolverine is locally owned and operated for nearly 75 years. Michigan people giving you the best water of your life. Check them out at WolverineWaterSystems.com. WolverineWaterSystems.com. It's the Steve.
I have always been a I can do it kind of girl. This is Johnny Erickson Tata. And even when I was little, they tell me my first words were knee do. The first time I rode a bike, I just knew I was balancing it all by myself. But then I noticed that my father was running alongside with his hand on the back fender. I protested, "Daddy, let me do it. Don't help me. Let me do it." Well, I got my way and went crashing into the sidewalk with my bike. But my independence ended when I was 17. That's when I broke my neck diving into the Chesapeake Bay, which resulted in quadriplegia. That was over 40 years ago. And if there's one thing I have had to learn as a quadriplegic, it's to ask for help and then to receive that help graciously. Hey, it's okay to ask for help. It's one way of encouraging others to get close and learn how to serve. If you need help, ask. From disabilitycampaign.org. Recently, I spent time with a group of young people who were hearing impaired and deaf. This is Johnny Erickson Tata, and I'd like to pass on some tips on how you can reach out to people who are deaf. First, talk directly to the deaf person and not to the sign language interpreter. Second, if a deaf person speaks and you don't understand, don't pretend that you know what he said. Instead, ask him to repeat his statement or write it down. Third, be careful not to cover your face. Many deaf friends rely partially on lip reading in order to understand what you're saying. Also, don't talk too fast. Be patient, even if it takes a while to converse. And lastly, don't yell. Sometimes people even yell at those of us in wheelchairs, and that can be embarrassing. But most importantly, don't back away. Don't be shy. These are just some deaf etiquette tips for you, and there's more at disabilitycampaign.org.